This is Mitch Albom with Ken Brown on 760 WJR, where Michigan comes to talk. Sitting in for Mitch, Mike Parsons and Marie Osborne.
Time is flying. We are down the home stretch. And, yeah, Marie, we talked about this a little bit before the break. There is a potential disaster in the healthcare system looming, and it's very alarming.
Yeah, a shortage of two critical chemotherapy medications. And what's happening here is that some hospitals here in Michigan and health systems are having to find alternative treatments for patients. And these are patients who are in desperate need of this medication. We wanted to find out why this is happening. Joining us to talk a little bit about this, shed some light on this, is Laura Oppel. She's the Michigan Hospital Association Executive Vice President. Laura, we're glad you could join us today.
Thank you so much for having us. We really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this situation.
This is hair-raising, to say the least. I know people who are in the midst of chemotherapy. I can't imagine the fear they must be feeling, knowing that they may not get all of the medication they need to fight this disease.
And I share your concern. What I want to say, first of all, is anyone who is frightened or has concerns, please reach out to your clinician, whether it's a physician or a nurse practitioner. I think they can help explain what's going on and explain how different facilities and health systems are working very hard to make sure that everyone gets the right care every time, although drug shortages make this extremely difficult. We have a shortage of two specific drugs, cisplatin and carboplatin, which are used to treat various types of cancer, including bladder, lung, ovarian, and testicular cancer. And this shortage is not only in Michigan, but it's across the U.S.
So, Laura, this may seem like an obvious question, but what is behind this shortage? Is it a multifaceted, or is there one thing you can point to that's holding up the manufacturing and distributing of these critical drugs?
In this particular case, we understand that there is one overseas manufacturer that had an issue with manufacturing. The production was placed on hold. There are five manufacturers total of these platinum drugs. The other four were not able to fill the supply gap. I know that the FDA leaned in very hard with the manufacturer that did have to pause its production, and they have pressed, and we believe that there might even be some cisplatin being released now and on its way to hospitals and cancer centers. Whether or not carboplatin is being released is hard to tell. And I would also say that no one has shared with us from our membership, which includes all of the hospitals in Michigan, no one has said to us, oh, you know, we're able to breathe a sigh of relief because the cisplatin has arrived, you know, the orders have been filled or things like that. So I do want to impress upon folks, however, that everyone is doing the best they can to manage their existing supply, to use alternative drugs where they are available, to adjust chemotherapy regimens as appropriate, and even, you know, sharing health systems where folks might have enough to keep them through a few weeks, and could even share off to others who are looking for additional supply.
You know, one of the reasons I also heard, and you can tell me if this is true or if it's just rumor, that a lot of these drugs have become generic, and they become more affordable to the consumer, but it's not as profitable to the pharmaceutical companies, and they're simply choosing not to manufacture them. Is that also what's happening here?
I think that, you know, I can't comment on the profitability because I don't have enough knowledge of that, but I did have a chance to speak directly with our U.S. Senator Gary Peters, who said to me, Laura, we have to look at the economic model here and make some changes to it. And I think that that's exactly what he was talking about, is there is very little margin to be made on these types of drugs that are older, are relatively inexpensive to manufacture and relatively inexpensive to sell. And so, you know, where is the incentive to do this, to do it in the United States where production is more expensive itself. So I think that you're probably headed in the right direction with that. And that is something that MHA is, you know, learning more about. And I'm very much thinking that, you know, we need to learn more about how to move drug supply onto U.S. shores so that we don't have to deal with this constraints overseas, but also to understand how we make it economically viable to do so.
Yeah, Laura, we've talked about that very topic here forever, even before the pandemic and the supply chain issues that we were seeing. But why are all of our drugs made overseas and how scary is that? And when you talk about the profitability of these two drugs, perhaps being part of the equation here as to why they're hard to come by, you know, what I think about are a lot of the drugs that are on the market right now that that are very effective and very useful, and they're old drugs and they're basically pretty cheap. And I'm thinking, if they can do that to these chemotherapy drugs, are they going to be able to do that to some of the drugs that lots of people take every single day that are, I can't think of one right off the top of the head, but, like thyroid medication.
Drugs.
Thyroid medication is the one that I was thinking of. That's just a tried and true medication. It's been around forever, and it's very cheap. So I worry about that.
When we were speaking with the pharmacists about this particular shortage, you know, the point that they made to us was, yes, you're hearing about this. This is a life-saving drug, or these are life-saving drugs, like preserving drugs for people with cancer. But you have to understand, they said to us, we manage the shortage for dozens of drugs inside of our hospital pharmacies. This, it's not just a few, and it doesn't happen just once in a while. This is happening all of the time.
Oh.
And like you said, during the pandemic, you know, we had a shortage of what we call analgesics and paralytics, meaning things that keep people out of pain and not moving when they have to be on a respirator, which was so important when we had people using vents because of COVID. And, you know, we thought about it then, and now we're thinking about this. But it's happening much more frequently. And that was something even I was not aware of until we reach this current crisis.
So, I mean, what are hospitals and healthcare systems doing to make do with the limited supplies of cancer drugs that they do happen to have access to?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, they have incident command set up within their systems. They're looking every day at how much drug they need and how many people need it, and doing everything they can to manage that existing supply. There are alternative sources. Sometimes they are more expensive, require prior approval. We're asking our health insurers to do whatever prior approval is necessary on an expedited basis. We're thinking that there are times when things are recommended to be done every 3 to 4 weeks, if possible, maybe do it every fourth week instead of every third week at this point in time. I do want to share with you that there for parents and patients who might be out there thinking, what could I possibly do? There is a website known as angelsforchange.org, all one word, Angels for Change, and they are dedicated to giving people a voice to ensure access to life-saving drugs in the face of these potential shortages. I also want to share that we reached out to our federal delegation, our members of Congress, and they have responded in a terrific way. Our members of the U.S. House, led by Debbie Dingell and Tim Walberg, did a terrific letter asking many questions of the FDA, and then our U.S. Senators, Peters and Stabenow, and Congresswoman Slotkin, they did a separate letter that pointed out, you know, what I was talking about earlier in terms of we need a new model for how we can have better transparency and tracking, and even onshore production of our necessary pharmaceuticals.
And of course, make it profitable. I was going to ask you about, I know that you've reached out to the congressional delegations. I love the fact that this is a nonpartisan issue, that everybody is on board with this. I'm sure you didn't get too much pushback on this, that people are on board with this, because you know what? It just makes common sense.
Absolutely.
So we want to thank you so much for joining us today. Again, for those of you that want information on this, angelsforchange.org, correct, is the website that you'd like them. And I want to reiterate something you said at the very beginning, and that is if you're in the midst of chemotherapy and this is frightening to you, which we can all understand why, your advice is to please talk to your healthcare provider, ask and be informed, and be on top of it. You will get answers to your questions.
Yeah, they're there to help. Every single professional that I've spoken to, the clinicians, they are 100% worried about their patients and doing everything they can to serve them best. That's physicians, it's nurse practitioners, it's and the pharmacists. You'd be amazed at how much pharmacists in your hospital are involved in patient care. They all have their patients in mind, and they want to do whatever they can to get them through this. So thank you for having us on today to talk about that.
Thank you, Laura. Laura Oppel is with the Michigan Hospital Association. She's the Executive Vice President.